Hey everybody, it's Terry with Marketing Mambo. And if you're familiar with Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, or Dan Andrews' The Tropical MBA podcast, and then the business and lifestyle of my guest today, Tom Liebelt, is going to sound pretty familiar. Tom is a native of Poland. He grew up in Poland when it was still a communist country. When we talked, he was in Thailand. He has a lifestyle that he can run his business from anywhere in the world. And so he chooses to split his time between Thailand and a couple of other areas that I'll let him talk about. But anyway, Tom has some really interesting views on marketing, interesting views on what it takes to be an entrepreneur. And I think you're going to really enjoy hearing from him. So if you are thinking about making a change in your life, I mean, maybe not anything as radical as what Tom's doing, but if you're at a crossroads and you're thinking about what's next in my career, I'd really like to be able to align my career with a lifestyle that feels more satisfying. If you're finding yourself at that crossroads, I want to invite you to go to terrybmcdougall.com and book a time on my calendar for a no-cost exploratory call to see if having an executive and career coach to help you get clarity on your goals, shift your mindset to really believe this is possible, and have a partner to help you develop that roadmap to get to the life and career that you absolutely love. And then go ahead and take that action today. You'll be glad you did. And now, without further ado, let the mambo begin. Welcome to Marketing Mambo with your host, Terry McDougall. It's the fun and fast podcast where we cha-cha chat with marketing movers and shakers from around the globe. Everybody, it's Terry with Marketing Mambo, and my guest today is a true global citizen in addition to being an expert in SEO, digital marketing, and social media marketing, among many other things. Tom Liebelt is CEO of We Market Online Courses. His company helps entrepreneurs such as coaches, authors, speakers, attorneys, media personalities, influencers, with business plans and strategy, marketing and advertising, and systems and operations, including staffing solutions. I'll admit that maybe there's a little bit of an ulterior motive for me having Tom on today, because I think I'm going to learn a lot from him, and I hope that you will too. In his free time, Tom loves exploring new countries, building things, New York boom bap hip hop, which I want to hear a lot more about that. And of course, eating tacos, which by the way, of course, eating tacos. I love tacos too. Welcome, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. And I'm curious, where in the world are you calling in from today?
Well, today I'm in Krabi in Thailand, right by the beach. So about 2 weeks ago, we made a move down from the mountain area up north. Yeah. So even though we can't really travel much, you know, with the whole situation now, we still move around a bit from like the mountain area to the beach and then maybe to Bangkok for a bit to be in the city and then back and forth like that. Yeah. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, I definitely want to talk to you a little bit about your citizen of the world lifestyle that you live. And it's very intriguing to recognize that I kind of sense from your bio that you've been very inspired by Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Workweek and designing your business and your life to be able to have time for your passions, which part of that is travel.
Yeah, definitely planted the seed. This podcast called The Tropical MBA, that's really what got me into that travel mode. You know, it's kind of funny. You know, they used to make like the coffee shops in Vietnam and Thailand just sound so amazing. So like we're having all this fun and people are flying in and this and that. And it was sort of true. The community was there. Everything was great. The business world, yes, agreed. But then I actually went to some of these coffee shops and I was like, this is the place, you know, because they were just like a regular, like lower end Starbucks. And like, yeah, it's the people, man. But they made it sound so enticing. Like, you know, everything was great except for those coffee shops.
That's so funny. Well, it got you there, which is so cool. You know, it's funny how we get inspiration from different places. I'll have to make a note of that tropical MBA.
Yeah, they're great guys. They're great guys.
Well, very cool. Well, so how did you get started in the world of sales and marketing?
In the sales of marketing? Well, when I was little, I lived in Poland, which was a communist country back then. And my dad would smuggle things in and out of Germany. You know, like he would smuggle maybe liquor into Germany and then VCRs and electronics back in. And some of the stuff he was selling, like the smaller stuff, like VHS tapes or anything like that, like I would hustle it in school, right? So the bigger stuff, I would help him at the soccer stadiums, which is when we sold stuff. And then smaller stuff would be in school, like the, you know, stuff that didn't cost too much. So that was really my start. You know, the initial seeing that I can buy something cheaper, which he would do in Germany, and then sell it for more, you know, just the basics of business. And it still holds now. You know, you got to make money and you got to know how to sell. Those are the only two things that are going to keep you in business.
Yep. Buy low, sell high, right? It's funny. I love hearing that, you know, you're helping your dad, like basically fence stuff that he was buying in Germany. Most people, at least in the United States, like, you know, maybe they're like, oh, I got my start in sales selling Girl Scout cookies door to door or Boy Scout popcorn or something like that. That's a funny story. Thank you for sharing that. Well, so, you know, one of the things that I love about the name of your company is that you are not burying the lead. Like, you put your value proposition right out there in the name of your agency. We market online courses. Now, I know when I was introducing you, I just scratched the surface of what you do. Can you give us a little bit more color or more of an in-depth overview of what your company is all about?
Yeah. So, we actually moved from a generic marketing company into this niche, right? For many, many years. Initially, we started as an SEO company about 12 years ago. And yeah, it's, you know, it's easy money, good money, recurring, but we just don't like the industry. The sellers are usually pretty scammy, and it relies on Google, which is just one platform. And one of the constraints we put into our business was we will never rely on just one platform for anything. You know, so not Facebook, Google, Pinterest, nobody. Like, you can't put us out of business. So we moved into a more of a generic marketing agency after that. The thing we quickly realized is, yeah, you can make money, but it's difficult. Because if someone comes to you and says, why should I work with you over like Jay Abraham or Dan Kennedy or some of these old, bigger, you know, players? I'm like, well, if you've got the budget, there's zero reason you should work with us. Go with them. 100%. And we got into the course stuff sort of naturally, like a client from a previous business had us help with it. And then we, you know, it just grew in referrals. But at some point, we had a good amount of these course marketing clients. And I thought, what if we just go in this 100%? It's a smaller field, but we can dominate it. There are no platforms that can put us out of business. So that's good. And if someone asks us this ridiculous question, why should I work with you over Jay Abraham? I was like, well, because Jay would be paying me to market his course. It's simple, you know? Mm-hmm. So by moving into that, it made the sale process much, much easier. And we really did become big fishes in a smaller pond initially, right? So when we got into the marketing of courses, like maybe 4 years ago, we had 80,000 potential clients. That's it. In the whole world, 80,000, because we calculated it. And then through luck, last year with the COVID thing, it grew to about 400,000 or 500,000 now. So we are now a decent-sized fish in a lake. this is good. Mm-hmm. You know, since we are a higher-end boutique, we can only take on so many clients. I was like, with this amount, we're good forever.
Yeah.
Now we're expanding into other things again, because that's like the evolution of business. You kind of move from, you know, getting your expertise to kind of, you know, things that can scale. But that was really the move. We niched down so we can expand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Like, go narrow and deep. Yes. And establish yourself there. And then you can start looking at adjacent segments of the marketplace or some other part of the marketplace that is similar to what you're doing or values in a similar way. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I've seen this happening over and over, right? And for listeners who are getting into marketing, the quicker you do it, the better. You know, I found even with SEO, like some of my friends did stick around in it a bit longer. And I've seen anyone that was more niched down had higher growth, right? Like we had a friend that does SEO for dentists and another one SEO for lawyers, did much better than any generic agency, right? So I definitely do recommend going narrow and deep as fast as you can.
Yeah. What we were told when I was going through my coach training program is niche to get rich.
It's true, unless you pick a bad niche. So, you know, there are a few things you should look for. Does it have a high trajectory? What's the competition like? Do people actually spend money? Can they afford to spend money? Right? There are a couple of things you should look at. Is it platform based? You know, you don't want to be the next Facebook ad agency. You know, that's a bad niche to get into. But, you know, if you can answer all these questions, then yeah, you niche and get rich. That's exactly right.
You know, I think it's worthwhile. I mean, I think I understand why you're saying don't be dependent on one platform, but I'd like to spell it out for our audience. So, you know, can you talk to me about why that's not a good idea?
Well, the quick answer is, from my experience and seeing my clients fall off the cliff multiple times doing this, right? So with Google, right? When I was in the SEO world, big time, anytime Google had a big update or created a change, it wiped websites out, it wiped agencies out, it wiped income out, and you start from scratch. With any advertising platforms, it's the same thing. When they start changing things up, when they go away, your whole business is done, you start from scratch. We had a side business for a while in the Kindle industry, which were the books. We had a lot of books published, we had a team doing it. And again, initially when they needed us, it was great. Money over fist. And then things started changing. They went from rental income to no rental income for books, right? So initially when, you know, you put out Kindle books, you could sell them or rent them and you had like a dollar something for a rental. They killed that. They said they didn't want to do it anymore. Then they moved to Pages Read. So the income again went from like a dollar something to 3 or 4 cents. Then everyone else got into it. Then they started canceling books and accounts because they're like, oh, we don't need these anymore. Now we are, you know, picking and choosing who we want to work with instead of, you know, before anybody coming to our platform. So that business, I've seen what happens when you're, you know, on a platform. And also when I mentioned the Facebook ad agency, I've seen a lot of clients completely get destroyed by using just one platform or being associated with one company. And that company either just severs ties or goes out of business or changes things enough, just like Google, where they are now starting from scratch. You're always building on quicksand anytime you use any of these agencies, you know, or platforms as this connection. So the bad thing is that it's much harder to do things completely on your own. You know, it's easier to connect with someone, right? Like I have a friend that I know who created a productized service connected to HubSpot, right? Mm-hmm. Huge agency, right?
Right.
A lot of money quickly. He's doing great with it. But what if something happens? Again, and it always does at some point. So now it's a question of, can I build it quick enough and sell it before something happens? So another friend, he had software for Amazon sellers. I think it was like, I don't remember the name anymore, but here's what happened. He built it up really quickly and it helped people track their rankings in Amazon when they were selling and get reviews. It was one of those reviews plays, right? Like when you put a product out, you can quickly use this app to get reviews from people, stuff like that. Well, he got lucky. He sold it for a couple million a month before Amazon put the hammer down and destroyed that whole business with the review exchanges. So now the buyer was out of luck for a couple million, right? But that's what you're playing with then. If you're doing platform-based, it's a short-term, how quickly can I scale this thing and sell it before something happens?
Yeah. You know, the thing, as you were talking, there were a couple things that came to mind. And I think that these are basic tenets of business. You know, one is you want your business results to be as predictable as possible. right? And if you're working with just one platform and then all of a sudden they change the algorithm or they change the rules, and then something that was predictable yesterday is no longer predictable, right? And you have no control over that situation. And then I think one of the other things that you're talking about here is really diversifying your business, right? So that if one of the planks of your business gets pulled out from under you, that it doesn't mean that everything collapses. And while you were saying that in some cases, like, that's easy, right? Because, okay, I understand how this works and I'm doing it and people want it and all of that. But, you know, I also think that in some ways it's sort of like being like a parasite on a larger animal, like those sucker fish that attach themselves to the shark, right? Yeah. And, you know, Amazon's the shark and these people are, you know, and they're getting a good meal off of it. But if the shark decides that it's going to like rub up against the dock and get the fish off, there's nothing that they can do about that, right? And I think that very often Amazon or Google or whoever tolerates that for a while. And then they look at that and they're like, oh, there's money to be made there. So we're going to change the rules so we can make that money. So somebody, you know, so these smaller entrepreneurs can't. So very, very interesting. I like that perspective that you're bringing to this. So my next question for you is really about marketing. Like I spent 30 years in marketing, but I will tell you, I think that every entrepreneur needs to be a marketer. But even for people like me that spend a lot of time doing marketing within big companies, it's not easy when you get out and you have to start doing it on your own for your own company. What's the biggest piece of advice that you have for someone who wants to get serious about marketing in their business?
Well, I've worked for big companies. That marketing is completely different from marketing for yourself. What they usually mean by marketing is branding or putting out a piece of paper that's been checked off by every lawyer and person in the company, right? So by the end, it's about as persuasive as a piece of wood. You know, and I've hit the streets with some of those papers and I'm like, these are completely useless, you know, and I would change things. But if they seen it, they were like, oh, this is not, you know.
Right. Didn't get through legal and compliance.
Yeah. So it's different. It's brand new. Like a lot of those companies, they will spend millions by making sure they get enough impressions or, you know, these metrics, which don't really correlate with sales, but it doesn't matter because a company like Coke, they know how much they're going to make. It's more about just setting up the next generation to know who they are, right?
Yeah.
As a small business, you don't have the money or time to set up the next generation to know who you are. You need to make sales now. So when a marketer at a company like Coke creates their material, they know that there's a whole team of people who will go into the distribution channels, go into the stores and push this, right? They don't think about it. As a small business, you have two things you need to get right. Your sales conversation is which normally gets pushed off by these big companies, by, you know, to salespeople. And then persuasive marketing that brings people into this conversation. Not make you think about the company, but directly tells them, okay, come into this page, and then this page better sell them on whatever you are doing or webinar. So the biggest difference is you don't have the support.
Right.
You don't have the support and you don't have the brand name behind you, right? So even with small businesses, and let's say online courses, we have a lot of rules and things we do to make sure that it sells. Unless you're a celebrity or a big influencer, then you can break every single rule and still sell. And this is the same thing with big companies. If you are Coke, you play by different rules than we market online courses. Very different rules. I need to persuade someone to come in and check out my page, and my page needs to sell them.
Yeah.
Coke doesn't really think that way.
Well, they're pre-sold. They're pre-sold from decades and decades of people being very familiar and having an existing relationship with the brand.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. They can set you up with the branding. They can make sure that kids from the age 3 or 5 associate Coke with Santa, with all these different things. So then when they want to grab for a drink, oh yeah, Coke, you know, but there's billions of dollars and a lot of time behind it, which we don't have as small businesses. So we think differently. Our sales, I guess, entire conversation needs to be much shorter, right? Like we need to, you know, get someone in, you know, and what's the longest we can chase for a client? A year, two, three? I mean, it depends on your business, but how long can you afford to do it? It really changes things. It's like what Warren Buffett says with stocks, you know, when the market goes down and, you know, we see who's really naked underneath, right? Like who can actually do what they said they would. When everything's bullish and you know, people are buying things left and right, you don't really need anything to sell as long as you have a decent offer. But when things become harder, when competition gets fierce and when people don't have as much money, then you're going to start really thanking your sales conversation and the persuasive marketing because it's going to keep you alive when everyone else is struggling.
Yeah. Well, speaking of difficult times, what have you seen as the trend during this time of COVID? Are people buying more courses because they're home and they feel like, okay, now's the time to improve, or people being conservative? You know, what are you seeing?
Well, two things really in my industry. One, we did get really lucky. You know, as I've said, my pool of potential clients went up from 80 to like 400, 500,000. That's great. You know, people are definitely taking more courses. They're used to it. However, there's another part which personally doesn't really do much to me, but it makes things more difficult. A lot more people are supposed competition now, right? So many jumped into it like, oh, he can do it, I can do it too, right? Copycats and, you know, things like that. So while I am picking and choosing my clients, I see a lot of the people in the niche fighting over scraps.
Right.
Because just so many people jumped into it now. You know, they thought there's no barrier of entry. And that's true. At the lower end, just put up a website and started going on social. And they're all fighting over the same few broke clients, you know, and it's more difficult. So even though the pool is much bigger, they can also become more selective now because there's so many, you know, they as always, go for the best one in the field. And I've seen this in marketing over and over, but I really noticed it in my field. You know, like before, I've always seen that 10% of the top marketers, they make 90% of the income.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the 80-20 rule, right? Except for you're saying it's the 10-90 rule.
Well, yeah, I actually thought it was a 10-90. I've seen that, you know, when things become very competitive and people have too many choices, they really, when someone doesn't know what to choose, they go after like the, you know, the Coke of the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you have less competition, then yes, it's usually the 80-20, but it becomes, when it's really fierce, it becomes even worse.
Right. But that seems to make sense, because if there's more risk or there's more noise, why not go with the sure thing, right? That even if you're going to pay a premium for it, you know what you're going to get in that case. That's really interesting. You know, it's funny that you brought up Jay Abraham, because I worked for a publishing company when I first got out of business school in 1995. And Jay Abraham was the editor of one of our newsletters. I guess I should say it more like, we did a newsletter that was, you know, Jay Abraham branded, if you will. And so I was on many conference calls with him. We went out to LA and went to one of his conferences. He's definitely one of those grandfathers of just marketing wisdom, you know, and back in those days, especially before the internet, he was somebody that really thought pretty innovatively about marketing. So that's interesting that we sort of have him in common.
Well, if you think about different business books, right? Getting Everything You Can Out of All You Got is the book that it's been rehashed and repurposed. Like almost any course you find on business fundamentals and marketing, all they do is read that book and just, you know, put a different cover on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I really found that, like, they're saying, like, oh, you need to read, like, Breakthrough Advertising, which, you know, not a really good book, in my opinion. But if you look at the Jay Abraham stuff, it's solid. And people will steal that content for the next 20, 30 years and still be making money. So that's why, you know, I name him, because, you know, I definitely learned more from him than from the noise, you know, by the, like, recent gurus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so definitely one of the things that intrigued me about you when we had our pre-call was your lifestyle. And you truly are a world traveler. I know you're in Thailand right now. And, you know, we mentioned some of your influences at Tim Ferriss and the Tropical MBA. So tell me more about, like, where are you going next? And I guess maybe once things open up a bit, what's next?
Well, my usual schedule was that I'm in Thailand for 6 months, then I go to the US for 3 months and go to Europe for 3 months. And I plan on continuing that as soon as I can again. I follow the weather, and it's my best year every year. With the business, I've really accomplished everything I wanted to with this company. You know, I can work when I want to, how I want to, with who I want to. So that's usually the goal that people strive to. But now it's, you know, we're really thinking about where are we going to do next? Like, how can we scale a different product, and how can we start creating more of the shovels in our niche than actually doing the work? So, and this is for anyone that gets into marketing, especially online. Initially, you become good at what you are. You trade time for money. Then you can rise to the top of that when things become super easy. And most people stick there. They're like, this is great. I can work 1-2 hours a day and make whatever I want to. But the next one is, how do I separate my time from my income? You know, and then we've done this with our previous businesses. So now it's just the next evolution. How do we do that? And the next is, how do I build something with an exit in mind where I can, whether it's an app or a shovel that I can just build up and then eventually sell? That's where the money's going to come from. And usually then you get bored again and go back to consulting and trading time for money. And then it's the same path over and over and over again. So this is the moment we're in. It's like, we have the perfect business, and how do we create the next thing that now we can start scaling in?
Yeah. What's inspiring for me about what you're doing is the fact that you imagined this and that you've made it work. And I think for so many people, and probably a lot of people that are listening to this podcast are, you know, working for companies and, you know, maybe in some cases dreaming that they want to do something really different, but maybe thinking that it's not quite possible or it's not practical or they're not going to make enough money. And certainly you, with your lifestyle and the success that you've had with your businesses, are proving that it is possible. What tips would you have for somebody that, you know, listens to this podcast and says, that's an aspiration that I'd like to live up to?
You just got to get angry enough.
Okay.
You got to get angry at your job. You got to be like, look, this is nonsense. Like, I remember, because part of my 20s, I wanted to get better at sales. I was good at sales, but I wasn't great at sales, right? So what I did is I went through a lot of different corporations. They gave me training, and then I hit the streets or the phones, whatever. I did everything inside, outside, retail. And once I started making the goals, I would quit and go to the next company. But I remember one I was sitting in, and I don't know why this made me angry, but it did. It was two different things. And I knew I'm leaving anyways to start my own, but it was an extra little salt on the wound, right? We were sitting in a meeting, and right before the meeting, the manager goes like, oh, we don't treat any of you as numbers. You're, you know, very important to us. And then he gave us like some list that we had to look over with our numbers on it.
That's funny.
Because we do, because, you know, we had numbers as employees. And I looked at him. I was like, this dude. And then we went to a company kind of retreat. Where we're supposed to, you know. Yeah. So anyways, like, everyone's playing baseball. I'm not. Me and my friend, like, we went to the side, like, played a little basketball. And, like, you know, he was talking like, you know how stupid we are? And I'm like, why? Because we were selling insurance at the time. It was life insurance. I'm like, we sell a policy. They give us 3 to 6 months of that policy. And if someone stops paying for it, they take all our money back. Or if the back-end office just doesn't do their job, we also lose the commission. And then they keep the next 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
What if we just sold something of our own and we kept the 30 years? How many months from now could we stop working completely?
Yeah.
And it's you know, those seeds that people plant in your head. And this is why I went into SEO first, because SEO is a recurring income, very easy, you know, just sell. And it was true. I sold, I think, 20 customers, and I was like, I don't have to do anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to get angry enough. That's what happens. Like with me, I was good at sales. I was always interested in business. You know, business is not for everybody. It's, you know, that's just a fact. But if you are inclined to do that, actually pick the worst job you can, go work there until you get mad enough so that you can remember those days. And I remember mine. I was working at a company and I had to go sell door to door business stuff, you know, B2B in New York, in Queens, Harlem, Bronx, Brooklyn, in the middle of the winter. And they wouldn't even give us days off when we were sick. So even now, when I have a tougher day, I think of myself running a fever during a blizzard, trying to walk through Brooklyn with people slamming doors in my face. Mm-hmm. I'm good.
Well, no wonder you're in Thailand, right?
That's a part of it, but it's, you know, just having something like that to kind of bring you to reality. Like I'm like, oh, I'm so annoyed. Like this thing didn't go well. We didn't make this much extra this month. And I'm like, hold on a second. Just think back to those meetings. Oh yeah. And the meetings too, you know, the nonstop meetings about nonsense with your management team.
Yeah.
All I have to think is, you know, a little bit about that. And I'm like, I'm good. My business is great. There's nothing to complain about. Let's keep going.
Yep. That's good. I like that. That's good advice. I've had some bad jobs in my day too. And flip side of that is that I was really glad. I've got three kids and I was really glad that before I had kids that I got to travel and stuff, you know, so I'd, you know, sometimes be up at 2 o'clock in the morning changing a diaper and like remembering that view over Lake Tahoe or something. You know, I'd be like, oh, I'm really glad I have that to inspire me. Like my life isn't all changing diapers at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. So it works both ways, you know.
Right.
But if you want to start a business and you're scared, you need something that's going to push you into it.
Yep.
And usually if you can get that anger and fuel, you know, this motivation, that's usually that's what worked for me. A lot of people planted those seeds. And that's Tim Ferriss. I actually didn't think that his book was that great. And I know he forgot to mention that he sold a $20 million business before he wrote that book. And it was just, you know, it was a lot of nonsense in there.
Yeah.
But he planted a seed.
Yeah, I know. I was checking him out. You know, I listened to the book on Audible and, you know, I was inspired by it because he definitely got me thinking about a lot of things. But I checked him out on LinkedIn and, you know, he went to Princeton and he went to a prep school. And, you know, that kind of did. I didn't know about the $20 million company that he sold, but I do give him credit for inspiring. But it wasn't like, you know, he started from the gutter.
No, not even close. Like the funny thing is that the reason he wrote the book is because he had all this money. And he didn't know what to do with himself. And then he started thinking how he can, like, you know, make his life as seamless as possible. So remove the friction from his life. And we do that when we travel a lot. Like, you know, I make sure, you know, my laundry is done, my cleaning is done, I have food. Like, I remove friction from my life. That's the one thing that Tim Ferriss did really well. But it's definitely hard when you're not making the money to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And, it, you know, honestly, there's something as an entrepreneur, and I'm somebody that knows how to do a lot of things, which I think actually can be the kiss of death if you know how to do a lot of things, because sometimes you do those things that you shouldn't do, you know, that you really should find somebody else to do. And I'm constantly thinking about that, okay. And actually I coach a lot of people on that too. It's like what work on your highest value work, right? And delegate the other things, because then that does free you up to work on the things that where you're going to get leverage from a business standpoint.
So one of the hosts of the Tropical MBA, he's a friend of mine, Dan, he just said two things recently, which really work with this. And I've thought about a lot. The first one is that skills are dangerous.
I agree.
You know? Because that's exactly what you go into is I'm going to do it all because I'm the best. Horrible. And the second one is, what if you run this mental exercise and think, I will no longer sell anything this year that I have to fulfill myself. And you're then on the way of building a real business. Not a glorified 9-to-5 or a freelance job, but that's how you will build a real business.
Yeah, you're reminding me of the E-Myth, you know, where it's like, don't work in your business, work on your business, right? Like your business has to have a structure so that it can stand on its own. and, you know, that you can actually walk away from it and the business keeps going. Right. And that's, you're getting me thinking, this is good. It's all good stuff.
The trouble is with the e-myth, it works when you build it from scratch. It's really bad if you try to put that onto your current freelance or whatever business you have where you're doing the work, right? That's why when he said, what if you just start not selling anything where you have to fulfill? Mm-hmm. Then you change your business, because it's going to be really, really hard for you with those dangerous skills to now move away from that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really something for me to think about as a coach, you know, because I like coaching. I get a lot of fulfillment out of it, but that's a lot of skin in the game, you know, for me, it's my time. It's trading time for money. You're right about that. When you're working with coaches or influencers or any other kind of professional, and they're moving from, you know, trading the time for dollars into developing a course that, you know, allows them to scale their business, what's some advice that you have for them about how to make those first steps?
Well, don't build before validating, right? So the worst thing you can do is put in a year or two into creating a course, come to me, and then when I ask you who asked you to make this, you have no idea. That's a bad start, you know?
Right.
What we've done lately is, and it's been working actually really well for the validation part of our clients, is we say, why don't you try selling like a 3-hour live bootcamp first? You're not creating any extra work beforehand. You can test your assumptions during the marketing, right? So instead of, let's say, people that you think will want to learn about public speaking or the fear of public speaking, you know, we quickly realize they want to learn about persuasion or something else. Well, you haven't lost any time. The marketing tells you, okay, this should be my first lesson. when I start doing the bootcamp, then you can, you know, have a bunch of paid people go through an hour of this and be like, well, I'm going to teach about this next week, but what would you want to learn about? Mm-hmm. And they help you develop your curriculum, and they're paying, so their opinion matters. Because they're non-paying people, your friends, family, anyone, it doesn't matter. The worst thing I see done is someone go into a group on Facebook with other course creators and say, hey, I've created this about therapy. What do you guys think? It doesn't matter what they think.
Well, and plus they'll be like, oh, that's really good. That's good.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't, it's like, why are we even doing this? No point.
Right.
So the bootcamp kind of solves this. You don't create anything beforehand. You try to sell the idea, and you can pivot really quickly in your ads, you know, and then adjust your first module based on that. And you learn from your customers. Sometimes you might have to do 2 or 3 iterations of that bootcamp until you have the testimonials and a curriculum that's now ready to go. And people will buy based on, you know, because other people went through it, you've showed the results. I find that's the easiest and most risk-free way of getting into the online course space.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And would you say that some of the same, you know, thought process or strategy would apply to larger businesses as well, if they want to go into a new market or they're innovating a product or something like that to sort of test and learn?
Courses and products are very different, so they sell differently. I found this be the best way of doing courses. For products and services, it's a bit different.
How so? I'm interested to hear your perspective on that.
Okay. So, and this is actually one of the biggest mistakes I see people making with courses too, is when you have a product or a service, you want someone to try that out and then see if they like it. If you're selling a car, what's the first thing they tell you? Get them in the car, get them to drive the car and like in the car. Mm-hmm. If you have a service, here's a trial. See if you like it, and we'll continue. Let's say cleaning. We'll clean the house, and right. With courses, it doesn't work. If I am teaching meditation, for example, and I find a lot of people say like, hey, let me teach you these 2 meditation techniques, and then I'll sell you more. And then they wonder why no one bought them anymore.
Right, because people are like, that's enough. Well, I'll just keep using the same 2.
Yeah, you can't sell teaching based on the same teachings, right? So if someone bought not even but, because you probably got the free lead magnet, how to meditate for 5 minutes, whatever, right? And they haven't even looked at it. We don't look at half the stuff we have. But we check it up in our hands. We're like, okay, well, this is done. It's on the shelf now. It's in the folder, whatever. Well, I'll get to it when I need to. And then they start getting email like, well, now I'm going to teach you 20 more techniques in meditation. Like, why in the world would I want to do that? I already checked it off when you gave me those 2 5-minute ones. I'm done. Right? Mm-hmm. It's not a service or a product.
Yeah, it's different.
It's different.
So how do you hook them differently, or how do you entice them to enter that credit card number and sign up?
Well, the initial part needs to be framing, right? So if you are about to take meditation courses, I can assume that you have some anxiety or you need more clarity. There are some different things, right? So we want to frame that. And what I might teach them is, how do I create a peaceful place in my house that's going to get me then what I need to meditate? So in different ways, like when someone is teaching how to do 50 pull-ups, I've seen a course do really well with that. Well, the one thing that you're going to need is grip strength.
Mm-hmm.
So let me start teaching you grip exercises. They're not going to help you do the pull-ups yet, but you're definitely going to need that. There was another course which they were selling how to play a didgeridoo, which is some kind of instrument in Australia that they use. Well, the framing was, let me teach you how to breathe properly, because these breathing techniques will be necessary to then learn how to play. So you see what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah. You're getting them ready to start. You're not starting.
Yeah.
They're moving one step closer to the starting line, which I think that's interesting, because I do think that people, that they start to anticipate, like, oh, okay, I'm already thinking what it's going to be like when I meditate every day for 30 minutes. My life is going to be great. But you're not giving away the store, right? You're just you're getting them more prepared to buy.
That's it. So you're framing the whole thing. This is what it's going to look like afterwards. But this is what you need to know now before we get started.
Mm-hmm.
So now when someone's practicing their grip strength and all this stuff, and now when they get the, okay, I'm going to teach you now how to do 50 pull-ups, they're like, okay, I'm excited now. I've been working on this. Let's get into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I taught you how to do 10 pull-ups and then I'm going to teach you how to do 40 more. It's like, oh, I think I can do it. I can do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So that's how it's very different from products or services. The sample area of it is different. You can have someone try the same thing to want more of it. With Coke, if I give you a Coke and you like it, you're going to want more.
Right. You're going to be thirsty again, or your house is going to be dirty again.
Yeah.
If they give you a free cleaning or a discounted cleaning the first time, you know, your house will get dirty again. You will need that product or that service. Yeah.
So that's the biggest difference in it. It sells very differently. So all the rules do not apply that they would to products and services.
That's really helpful. So I feel like this has been a really interesting conversation. I've learned a lot. So do you have any final words of wisdom for our listeners, Tom?
Words of wisdom. Stop listening to internet marketers. Stop reading books that came out in the last 3-4 years. They're all usually rewritten, something that's been done already well before. And don't read anything that's a business card for someone. So here's what you might not know, and I've learned this a few years ago by working with clients. Every public speaker or coach or, you know, anyone that does speaking, they need to put out a book every single year to get those engagements. That's what the book is written for. The book that you're reading, trying to get advice from, is only written so that they can get speaking engagements for the next year. It's a business card. Don't read those books. They're nonsense.
Hmm. Of course, that's not why I wrote my book.
Well, look, it's just the fact of it, right? Like, most of them can be summed up in a paragraph.
Yeah. It actually is so interesting, because I know when I was writing my book, I went through like the writer's block and worried, oh, is this going to suck and all this kind of stuff. And then I started looking at my bookshelf, and to your point, like, there's a lot of very, very well-known authors, and I'm pulling it off and it's like, it's the same book, but it's the 6th edition, right? It's this, you know, it's and it probably goes, for some of these authors, it probably goes back to the top of the New York Times bestseller, even though, you know, maybe like 5% of the book is they put like a half a new chapter in or something like that. But for many people, they're going to be like, oh, well, that's new. And I've heard of that author. That's really interesting. Yeah, I feel like there's some things that I did wrong if I want to use my book as a marketing piece, because I probably could have gotten 4 books out of the amount of content that I put in.
So that's a decent book then. But, you know, if they were making a play for it, it would be 4 different books with 4 different pitches and 4 different lead, you know. So you always got to look why the person wrote the book. That's the first thing, right? But I find that most recent books are nothing else but reframed stuff from back in the days.
Right.
So, you know, that's the one piece of advice. I see someone following, you know, someone new because they're really good on YouTube and exciting and their TikTok account's blowing up. And I'm like, but this is all the same nonsense that they've read from this person or that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not helping you with your business. You're just becoming another follower or fan that they can sell stuff to.
That's interesting. That was something that I fell victim to, especially when I first, you know, got out of my coach training and started my own business. You know, I think for a lot of people that are starting their own business, they worry like, oh, I'm not sure if I know how to do this. And there's plenty of people out there that are selling to entrepreneurs, you know, that they're making a living, understanding that maybe people are feeling a little insecure and playing into that. And not necessarily, to your point, selling them things that are really going to help them run a successful business.
The first thing I tell to my clients when I find out that they're new and have that insecurity, I tell them, you can do it all by yourself. The only thing I will do is save you some time. That's it. But you can pull this off. None of this is rocket science. It might take you a long time, but this is all stuff you can figure out yourself. Every single thing I do. If someone's playing on your insecurities, it probably means they also don't know what they're doing.
That's a good point.
And I've seen this on Facebook quite a bit when someone's like, I just sold this guy on a $2,000 thing. What do I do now?
Oh, yeah. Not a good sign.
No, but it's quite common. So if someone sells you in that way, then I would kind of take it up as that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Tom, thank you so much. And I like that last point, you know, I guess understand what it is that you're buying and don't fall into, you know, the window dressing, right? Is that pretty much what you're saying about, you know, understand why people are trying to sell you the things that they're trying to sell you?
Yeah. Yeah. That's something, you know, it's like someone doing a really, really nice and flashy presentation with no substance.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Got it. Well, Tom, I'm definitely envious of the warm weather that you're probably experiencing there in Thailand. I really appreciate you being on Marketing Mambo and wish you all the best with We Market Online courses.
Yeah, thanks so much. I enjoy these marketing conversations.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Marketing Mambo. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, like, and share. I'd love to hear from you. Check out the show notes for my social media and contact information. Until next time, adios.